The name of the movie is After Innocence. This is Nick Yaris from Pennsylvania. He got out of jail after 23 years on death row. He was exonerated by DNA evidence. Talk a little bit about the movie.
So that started us off. So I said, okay, well, listen, I'm just going to let them go, you know, get their gear together. And I went in the house. He came in my house. I went in the house and started getting a shower. He came in the house, went up to my room, and started knocking on my door. I said, listen, I'm getting dressed. He said, you guys in front of the way. I opened the door completely naked and said, excuse me? Run away? I was doing you a courtesy by stepping off. I said, oh, this is crazy. So I sent him downstairs. So that's how me and Mark Simon met for that day. And it was so funny because the guy in the Jeep with me with the camera did the documentary for Motley Crue. In the Belly of the Beast or something where they all went to rehab.
Okay, yeah, I read the book, but I haven't seen the movie. I didn't know there was a movie about it.
Right, so while we're in the Jeep together, he kept telling me all this stuff. He said, this is really cool. He said, I just did a documentary with, like, Tommy Lee and all that. He said, but I'm really, like, having a great time with you. He said, I think this is even cooler. I said, well,
Well, it's definitely an interesting story. The movie also goes on to talk about four or five other people. One of them was a cop who was arrested for murder and did a long time, and a bunch of other people, and they all got out. They were all in there for, you know, within 10 to 20 years probably, and the DNA evidence that they were able to procure finally was able to get them out.
Yeah, I know. Vincent Moto is doing some of the music tracks on a couple of the film. He did some music on it. And he called me. Vincent's from Philadelphia as well. And so he and I, you know, he's the only person who called me New Year's Day and wished me Happy New Year's.
Wow. Yeah, he ended up doing the final song in the movie in the end credits is his song, his rap song that he wrote about being in jail.
How cool.
Yeah. I went on your website last night and I read the whole story, about everything that happened to you over the 20-year period. And your
you still only got a thumbnail out of that, I assure you.
Oh, okay. Well, basically, the story ends in 2002, where you had just finally gotten your DNA evidence proving that you didn't do it. But that's where the story ends. You didn't get out until
that story actually was the beginning of a time in my life where, I mean, they had blinded me in prison. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, they almost killed me. They infected me with hepatitis.
Well, I did read about that.
Yeah, during the treatment process, they blinded me. I was blind for 3 days in my cell.
So how's your health now? Are you okay now, or?
I have a miracle story upon a miracle story because I'm in complete remission. This is like shockingly. This is what I have to tell you. There's so many things that have happened since my release that it astounds me that the things that I've witnessed. Yeah, really. I had blood work done because I had no medical insurance or nothing. So I had to go to a free clinic. And pretend that if you tell a free clinic that you might have a sexually transmitted disease, they have to give you a blood test for $10. And then you can get the blood work people to look and see if you have any communicable diseases such as hepatitis. And even though when I walked out of prison, I was diagnosed as terminal because I failed treatment and my kidneys shut down. They overloaded me with interferon so bad that it almost killed me. So much so that when they let me out of jail, I was diagnosed to have, like, terminal illness, and I was going to die. So now my blood results come back, and I'm in remission. And I'm like, are you kidding me? I'm in remission? So I get my life back after 23 years in hell, and then I get my health back.
So now, is there new things to fight hepatitis C since you wrote that story? Is there other people that are having the same results you are that you know of or anything like that?
No, see, I don't know any. All I know is that my life has been spared for now. I have chronic hepatitis. Listen to me. Every 21 days, I go through a 4-day cycle where I can't eat. I'm sorry, I just cannot eat food. I can't ingest food. I can't eat food. I get sick from the cell, smell of food. My organs swell up, and I shut down. This is there every 3 weeks I go through this. And so my weight will drop down about 7 pounds, and then I go back up after that. And my body, before a cycle, will always start gorging. It's a serious chronic illness. This is not like I'm all happy kicking my feet. I'm 6'2" and 211 pounds now. But I'm physically strong. That's the only thing keeping me upright because I endure an illness. Hepatitis is a really tough disease, man.
Yeah, well, I'm sure you're pretty tough, too, being able to fight it because of what you went through for over 20 years.
Oh, man, but you got to understand, I didn't know I was sick until I was already in solitary confinement for 20 years. Then, and the medical department in Greene County so stupid. They overamped me with so much interferon and Lumivirin tablets that my kidneys shut down and I go blind in the prison yard. And they don't just gently take me to the hospital. They assault me because I failed to respond to command. So that was my medical treatment, being beaten down and dragged out because I went blind in the yard. I mean blind, pitch black, can't see nothing, blind.
Okay, so after you finally got the results back at the end of your story, tell me about how you finally got out. What went on after that led to your release?
In chronological order. In the end of 2002, I wrote a letter to Judge Robert Giles, President Judge of District Court in Federal District of Philadelphia, and I asked to be executed. I had grown weary of a 14-year battle to be heard in the federal court and a 6-year battle to get Dr. Edward Blake, a forensic science associate, to listen to me to do DNA testing on a pair of men's gloves left by the murderer. No one wanted to listen to me. I had already been through 5 inconclusive DNA tests since 1988 when I was the first man in the United States to ask for DNA testing to prove my innocence. From that point, my government tried to murder me. They openly tried to destroy evidence. And all the while, I had gotten sick from their treatment in the medical department. I had already been blinded. I had already spent over 20 years in solitary confinement. I had already made peace with everything in my life. So I decided, enough. My lawyers were cheating me out of a federal hearing I fought 14 years for. Giles, and I asked him to contact the governor, Edward Randell, and that I'd be executed. When my lawyers found out about this, they went to Dr. Edward Blake, and they pleaded with him. They said, we have a madman on our hands. He has decided to be executed for a murder that we believe he did commit. This is the crazy part. My own lawyers always believed I was guilty. But we want you to do the DNA testing one last time. In April of 2003, Dr. Edward Blake got DNA results from inside the killer's gloves from unknown male number one. And he got DNA from the murder victim, Linda Mae Craig. And he got DNA from the second unknown possible victim from vaginal cell from a woman inside the killer's gloves. I began to make as much noise as possible to the media as I could, and everyone, and I mean everyone, refused to accept what I was saying to them. My lawyers simply said, well, we can't prove anything. The gloves, we don't know how we can say that they prove anything. And I said, well, these gloves were hidden by the prosecution at my trial deliberately. They did not fit me. They could not fit me. And the prosecution knew they weren't my gloves, but they were left by the murderer. And deliberate attempt was used by everyone to ignore this fact. It was a great white elephant no one wanted to recognize in the courtroom. But Dr. Blake was forced to do DNA testing further, and in July 2nd of 2003, he got DNA results from the pooled material of the sperm from the inside of the victim's underwear, from unknown male number one again, and unknown male number two now shows up, and none of it matches me. The sperm matches the killer's gloves. But Dr. Blake, in his haste, never tested the victim's fingernails that were found in an envelope in the clerk's desk by me because of my searching. And this DNA took another 3 weeks. At the end of July of 2003, Dr. Edward Blake got DNA from underneath the victim's fingernails where she fought with her attacker, matching the sperm, matching the killer's gloves. The Delaware County District Attorney then asked for 90 days to retry me for a murder that now DNA science has shown could not possibly be me. The court granted this request, and then a charade took place. They granted themselves the right to put a panel of grand jury together and put my family on the stand and tormented them with questions about the lineage of the birth of children in my family by my sister, hoping to catch her in a perjury about who may have fathered a child out of wedlock. They put my mother, who's been through more than you can imagine on the stand and tormented her with questions about whether or not she still believed her son wasn't a murderer. After DNA testing had already proved it.
So, eventually, everything came out in your favor and you were released about 1 year ago, right?
No, that's the shame of it. When the DNA testing came out in July of 2003, I was forced to endure another 7 months of solitary confinement in conditions worse than death row. These people literally took me off of death row, stripped all of my belongings, put me on a bus trip for 15 hours back to the prison at Greene County, where Charles Grainer, who goes on trial tomorrow, worked, and I seen that pig do so many things that disgust me. Anyway, I went back to that prison, and after 15 hours, the major of the guard met me and said, "Congratulations, Mr. Yarish, you've proven your innocence. We're so happy for you." So I said, "You're putting me in general population, right? You're going to give me my dignity and stop putting me in solitary confinement, right? No, I'm sorry, we can't do that." And I said to him, "Why? Why would you do that to someone after 23 years? So for the last 7 months of this ordeal, I sat in a cell and just simply was reduced to sitting there and dreaming out my life, because I had already known I was walking out that door. Three separate DNA testing had already proved my innocence. But it took some wrangling because I escaped from death row. I was the most hunted criminal in the United States from February 15th until March of 1985, when I escaped from death row and was on the America's FBI top 10 list. It's crazy that I had to actually escape from death row and turn around and turn myself back in and let these people harm me all over again for another 15, 18 years.
Yes, it's really an amazing story. So, you're going up to Washington, D.C. tomorrow for the hearing of...
No, it's gone now because his trial's in Fort Hood. So what I was going to do is wait and see what happens in the media and maybe either go and do, like, television or whatnot. I'm homeless.
You also have a DVD out about your whole ordeal. Talk a little bit about that and where somebody can get it.
Well, it was made by Columbia University when I first got out. And it's documenting, and it documents how... there's no compensation law in Pennsylvania for prisoners who have been wrongly convicted. It's incredible that with a system of 2 million people involved in a judicial system, and we know from those sheer numbers alone, we're going to have accidents. In all the states, there should be a combined uniformity of compensating people who are wrongly convicted. But it's not so. Pennsylvania, whatever they've done to me, they feel like they have no justification to compensate me or help me in any way.
And I guess suing is out of the question, too, because as far as the states are concerned, as long as they didn't make procedural errors in the trial, it's not their fault that you were found guilty, even though you were not guilty. Is that correct?
Well, the amazing thing is that all of the prosecutors and detectives have immunity for whatever you've done. You can commit any crime. You can hide any amount of evidence. As long as you don't admit to doing so, you have immunity. The prosecutor in my case first tried me for my original charges and lost before a jury after only 20 minutes of deliberation. His name is Barry Gross. He yelled in my face, "You'll never leave this county alive." He took over the prosecution of my trial for murder a week later and began seeking my death with the same judge, Judge Robert F. Kelly, who tried the first case also. And these two men proceeded to take my life in a trial that lasted only 3 days.
Now you are fighting for a bill where people like you who were released and wrongly imprisoned would be able to be compensated by the state.
Absolutely. And I'm also asking that DNA testing from every murder death case that was exonerated. There's only 13 of us in the whole world. And of those cases, only 3 of those DNA profiles were entered in the FBI's data bank to catch the real murderer. Because they don't want to catch the man. Because then they're going to have me outside the courthouse with another bullhorn.
So is the same prosecutor, same people still involved in the case that were back at the beginning, or is it just...
No, it's even worse. See, the system, our judicial system rewards those who make themselves worthy of it. So Barry Gross is now the United States Assistant U.S. Attorney in Philadelphia with Patrick Meehan, who is the U.S. Attorney in Philadelphia. They control the FBI's arm of investigation, so they're not going to investigate themselves for the corruption that they committed. I simply cannot get justice from the people who harmed me, who are now into federal judicial positions. Judge Robert Kelly is a federal judge. What he did is immune. What Barry Gross did to me is immune. Anything that they've done is now in federal custody and protection. They cannot be prosecuted. There are people who prosecute people for doing state crimes. Anyway, people can get a hold of that in the cares.com. I can't sell them. I just do it as donations. I don't have anything. I'm broke. I'm homeless. I'm actually, I this is serious. I was set free with $5.37 of my own money. That's how cheap they are, man.
People that are interested could make a donation through the website and get the DVD, find out your whole story.
Yeah, anybody wants to contact me. I'm also in corporate governance speaking. So any corporations that want someone with an interesting, anybody that wants to have me as a professional speaker can also contact me, since that is my profession. Did you know I delivered a speech in Parliament?
Yeah, I was going to ask about that. You were invited over there by the British government. Is that what happened?
Well, Alistair Carmichael of Her Majesty's Parliament invited me, as well as the mothers against the Uzbekis, mothers against the death penalty, and other international speakers to go on the House of the Floor of Commons. And I delivered a 22-minute written speech on the floor of the House of Commons.
Wow.
Yeah, no, it was crazy. I had, in one day, I did three speeches. I went from Her Majesty's Brixton Prison, where we had a bit of a scuffle during an hour-long display of speaking, but for three death row prisoners. I was on a tour with two other death row prisoners. We went there, then we rushed to Parliament, and then to Clifford Chance Law Firm, where Clive Stafford Smith, the internationally known death penalty attorney, operates out of in London. And we went to his law firm and did another speech there. So I went from prison to Parliament to crooks. I mean lawyers, I'm sorry.
You also have a couple of people that you promised to help out when you got out. How's that going? Are you...
Well, see, that's the wonderful thing. I was on the phone with someone who just called me to give good news to me that a prestigious law firm in Boston has taken on the case of Walter Ograd, an innocent man who people can read about in the Philadelphia Weekly June 17th article, in which called the snitch work. It's a fascinating story. A man came to me 3 years ago and asked to write a book about me, named Tom Lowenstein. And I said, I have lawyers, I got DNA testing going for me. This is in 2000. And I said, nah, I said, you know what? I have a friend here who I think, why don't you contact him and write a book about him? And he did. Well, what he did was he wrote a 5,000 word documented expose in the Philadelphia Weekly that people can get here online in Philadelphia from June 17th. It goes on to detail how Walter was actually acquitted by a jury, saved by for the sabotage of a juror who voted in the deliberations in the jury room to acquit Walter, walked out into the courtroom, and during individual polling of each juror, as it is done by law, he said, no, Walter's guilty. I lied. They took him back to jail and retried him with the help of a snitch, and they took Walter's life, a mentally impaired man. So, yeah, I had a real personal interest in what they're doing to a friend of mine.
Okay, well, and so the good news was that he's getting a new trial? Is that what it is?
No, he's getting a law firm from Boston to help him.
Great.
A very prestigious law firm, in fact.
So, between traveling to London and helping your friends out, and you're keeping pretty busy. You're also going to Sundance Film Festival next month?
Yeah, I just did. I was in Rome in October, where November 30th, I was on the stage at the Colosseum with 300 cities called Cities for Life with the Santa Egidia community. And it was with the mayor of Rome, the ambassador to Mexico, and 300 cities all over the world. We lit up the Colosseum on a live stage with Bud Welsh, the father of one of the Oklahoma City bombing victims, Julie Welch. And it was an incredible ceremony to go from there to Sweden, to be invited to the Parliament of Sweden, to interact with governments in England and France, and then to come home and have it be absolutely meaningless. It's just, it's strange. It really is, because so much of the world that understands how long the death penalty is not understood by the people who have the death penalty. That's the strangest thing in the world.
That's right. You go to all these different countries and you're treated very well by governments and invited to go and speak, and you come back here and we're the only free country in the world that has a death penalty, and you get treated like dirt. You don't even have a place to live.
Well, there's a truism from a saying at the Metropolitan College in New York that I read on the wall from its founder. And she said, what is it? A truism about America is what they cannot see, they do not believe exists. And it's so true. Until we see the bloody bodies being dragged through the streets of Iraq, we really do not believe it. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Everything that we're told, we do not believe in America, because it doesn't show itself to us here.
And
we don't see it here. Not in our homes.
Right?
People are not yelling at us in our streets, so we don't get it.
And since the U.S. government controls the media, we don't really get to see the things that other countries see that we're doing to make them feel in a bad way about us, because our media is so protected of the government.
I'm so ashamed of my government. I mean, do you know a member of the consulate in Poland? I was in Krakow, and I have a friend. I went to Auschwitz, and I had an amazing time over there. And I was in my favorite pizza parlor in Krakow. And a member of the consulate sat down next to me, and he was a man from the Midwest. And he had me talking. He turned to me and said, I recognize who you are. I saw you on the news when you were released in January. And he said, on behalf of the government that I work for, he said, I really apologize. And I said to him, I said, you know what? I really appreciate that. I really do, because it took the strength of your character to show that kind of decency. You don't know me. I could be the biggest ass of all after what's been done to me. People only see me speak in public, but my personal life is my personal life. I could be anyone.
That's right.
And for him to take that step and make that graceful gesture showed me that it's always going to be my country that I love, despite the fools who suck its blood.
And the only way we can stop that from happening is to stand up and let people know what's going on and hope that we can make a change.
Tell children that murder is the solution in your actions. That has a permeation that does not end.
The name of the movie is After Innocence. This was Nick Yaris. We've been talking to him from Pennsylvania. He got out of jail after 23 years on death row. He was exonerated by DNA evidence. You can find out more about him at nickyaris.com. Thank you, Nick.
Hey, thank you all, man. Be well.
Okay, check out the site. It'll be up there in the next day or two.
All right.
Bye-bye.